Hey, welcome to Space Gab. This is Mike Coletta. It's the 12th of January, 2022. Space Gab can be heard at www.spacegabpodcast.com, which brings you directly to my Anchor FM site where I host a podcast. You can also hear it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many other podcast venues. Well, something local here. I just picked up the paper today in the Colorado Springs Gazette, and it says Lamborn gets key military space post. Subtitle, leverage possible in HQ decision. Colorado Springs U.S. Representative Doug Lamborn has been named as the ranking member of the subcommittee overseeing space defense, missile defense, and nuclear weapons, gaining key leverage over space programs at a time when Colorado is fighting to hold on to Space Command headquarters. Representative Mike Rogers, the lead Republican on the Armed Services Committee, said he appointed his GOP colleague because of his passion on defense issues, and they recognized my dedication to these issues, partly because so much of this activity takes place in Colorado, says Lamborn. So, Colorado Springs, which has been for quite a long time headquarters to Space Command and many other military-type space ventures. Space Force things are going on here. If you know my history, I actually represented and supported Space Command for many, many, many years and was involved in many of the space programs. And now looks like they are not giving up on letting go of the Space Command headquarters, which is slated to go somewhere else, but they're fighting really hard to keep it here in Colorado Springs for good reason. I'll keep up on that issue and that attempt as it goes along. Well, even a satellite engineer can talk about the ocean and win a competition. From New Scientist, it says a satellite engineer with no background in oceanography has won an international competition to predict where a message in a bottle will drift to the open sea. Chris Wasson, who is based in Southern California, beat 31 teams to scoop the $25,000 top prize in the Forecasting Floats in Turbulence Challenge, organized by the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which many people know as DARPA. He figured out where certain things would be floating based on currents, and this will help them in the future with weather system forecasting and if there's there's oil spillage in the ocean where the oil slicks will probably drift to, things like this. But a satellite engineer won the competition. Over 31 other teams. And I'm guessing probably quite a few of those teams were experts in oceanography. You can read that article if you'd like. I have a link on the Twitter feed, twitter.com/Mike_Coletta, to this New Scientist article. Well, the ISS will be making a correction today, and probably today or it already did it yesterday, depending on when they were scheduled. But it's going to be a orbital correction. It's scheduled for preparation of the Soyuz MS-21 launch and the Soyuz MS-19 landing. The engines will burn for 395.4 seconds. Increasing the station's orbit altitude for 1.2 kilometers. So every once in a while, the ISS has to do these corrections, and they use the jets on the different spacecrafts. In this case, it's the Progress MS-18 engines that will burn and increase the height of the International Space Station. So they'll do this, for launches and when there's some cargo ship or manned ship coming to the ISS, or also if they have to do like space debris avoidance, which has been in the news quite a bit. So ISS doing an orbital correction, probably already done by now. Some concerns going on in Twitter land lately. Thomas Burghardt tweets out, and this was yesterday, according to the 2021 Aerospace Safety Advisory Panel report, both NASA and Boeing knew about OFT-2 Starliner's stuck valves problem prior to passing both the flight readiness review and the launch readiness review. Well, you know, if you've been in this kind of industry for a while, this would not be a surprise, because when it comes to something major like this, you're going to have things behind the scene going on, and maybe not, the public isn't aware of everything. But and I guess they came out later on, and he retweets something. It says, Boeing reached out to clarify that NASA and Boeing differed on how they characterized a similar type of risk to the one later discovered after the OFT-2 reviews. And then he offers a copy of the statement from Boeing. If you'd like to read that, it's on my Twitter feed. Mike, it's twitter.com/Mike_Coletta, or just go to Thomas Burghardt's, and let's see, his Twitter feed is the @ for Twitter, @TGMetsFan98. That's his Twitter feed, if you'd like to go directly to him and see what he says. But they're talking about how, you know, maybe the company will... It's all about risk, they're saying here, you know, the risk scoring and things that are done behind the scenes when it goes into these reviews, these different reviews. Risk scoring is the key point they want to make here. But and there's a lot of people on social media talking about, giving their opinion about why this is a bad thing, you know, when we're learning this. But there's probably a lot more to be found out about this, and why they decided, you know, to probably wait prior to actually scrubbing the launch and then looking at the issues more closely. And as we know, they did find issues that needed, you know, definitely needed repair and replacement, and actually a new service module. But yeah, if you'd like to go read more about that, and, you know, Boeing giving statements, NASA giving statements about, you know, why, explanations and all that. So this one's going to be going on for a while, and I'm sure that the public will be very interested in reading all about it. See, space debris is hazardous. I guess they have come up and they said that the breakup of China's Yonghe-1 satellite was linked to a space debris collision. Space News has a pretty good article about that, if you'd like to read that. But they've done some trackbacks and determined that that satellite was actually hit by some space debris, and that's why that satellite broke up while in orbit. So China's Yonghe-1 satellite broke up because of a space debris collision. Well, the first spacewalk outside the International Space Station of 2022 is set for January 19th. It says Anton Skaplerov and Petr Dubrov, and I hope, and I probably did not pronounce those names right, are preparing for the first Russian EVA in 2022 on January 19th at 1200 UTC. The main task is the integration of the Prichel module, installing handrails between NACA and Prichel, connecting KERS-P and TV cables, and assembling docking targets. So, January 19th, a Russian EVA at the International Space Station. Well, a few days ago, North Korea did another ballistic missile test. But this one had more implications than the first. This one, it says here, FAA issues ground stop. North Korea ballistic missile test suspected reason. Flights briefly grounded at West Coast airports over suspected North Korea missile test. I don't think they were stopped very long. I would imagine just, you know, a small number of minutes, according to some articles, but they did put a ground stop at some of the West Coast airports because of this launch. Now, I read articles where it said that NORAD never put out an alert as far as, you know, like a missile alert type thing. So it might have been, they're saying it might have been one of the local FAA control centers or things like this. But somebody put out a ground stop, and it was related to this North Korean ballistic missile launch. And you'll probably read different articles about it. The first one I saw was from Newsweek, and they're the ones that were talked about and pointed back to on many of the original social media news posts. They talked about it. It says, yeah, it says here, yeah. Let me just read this. I'll tell you. It says, the Federal Aviation Administration ordered a full ground stop at all, this one says all, West Coast airports on Monday as North Korea fired what appeared to be a ballistic missile. The stop lasted 7 minutes, according to a San Diego media, citing radio traffic and officials at the San Diego International Airport. Let's see, it says Sabrina LaPiccolo, spokeswoman for the airport, told Newsweek that the airport was instructed by air traffic of a national ground stop. Now, she says national ground stop about 2:30 p.m. Pacific time. No reason was given for the stop, which lasted about 5 to 7 minutes, she said. Now, later, I think someone reached out to NORAD and asked them about it, but many indications are saying that it wasn't really a national ground stop. It was more just affecting the West Coast. So I haven't read any, you know, of the latest articles about this. But anyway, there was a ground stop, and it is being related to this ballistic missile test. So the path of the missile must have been such that aircraft that would be flying from the West Coast in a westerly direction, and the missile, you know, may have come close. You never know. I don't think any airline passenger has provided, that I saw anyway, a photo from an aircraft window as a flight is going that shows the actual missile. Although I may have missed some things, but I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if anybody actually caught that missile in flight on a photo from an aircraft or whatever. But a ground stop was made. Apparently, it wasn't a national ground stop, but it was like a West Coast type ground stop, according to Newsweek and others. I saw some recent posts about it says here, just in today, this is from Andrew Parson. There appears to be a fairly serious power issue with ESA's Sentinel-1B Earth Observation Satellite. The issue began on December 23rd, and an internal recovery attempt has failed. So there's probably more out there right now on social media about ESA Sentinel-1B satellite. I guess it was supposed to, it's been working for a number of years, they're saying, but it was supposed to work a little bit longer than what they're having problems with now. So something about a power issue, fairly serious power issue, they're saying. So I'll check out on more and maybe report more on this as it comes available for the next Space Gab podcast. Have you seen the new video by Katy Perry? She starts out coming out of a phone booth, and what's in the background? Well, it's SpaceX Starships, two of them. Actually, there's a third that's kind of showing here a little bit, but she's got Starships in the background, and she walks toward these SpaceX Starships, and then it looks like she's actually dancing with a bunch of her people inside the SpaceX facility. I don't know. Well, if you want to see the video, I did watch it. I'm not a Katy Perry fan, but I did watch it because of the, you know, the space-related stuff going on. And I do have a link to the video on my Twitter feed and some screenshots of that video so you can see her coming out of the phone booth with the SpaceX Starships in the background and a whole bit. Everybody's getting into the space stuff, aren't they? But twitter.com/Mike_Coletta to go to my Twitter feed, and you can see that link and many others. Well, Virgin Orbit has a launch coming up. Virgin Orbit tweets out the launch window for Virgin Orbit's third commercial flight above the clouds opens this Wednesday, January 12, 2022. The spacecraft to be launched to low Earth orbit at 500 kilometers circular orbit at 45 degrees inclination for this mission includes satellites. And there's a link to that. And I haven't even looked to see if that actually happened yet. I'm looking at it right now, but I don't see any updates. So, not sure if Virgin Orbit, you know, that's the one that releases the rocket from the, what is it, the 747, and takes them up so high, and they let go of the rocket, and it, boom, goes. Let's see. Okay, let's say, nope, doesn't look like it went yet. They're talking about it, you know, going to be going here. And the last tweet they sent out was 28 minutes ago. It says, what does this mean for the future opening? Okay, blah, blah. If all goes successful, this will be the first time ever that anyone has reached this. Okay, well, reached this orbit for the coast. So it looks like it hasn't gone yet, but I'll update it and give you more information on this upcoming launch for the next podcast. Well, you know, the James Webb telescope is pretty much all unfolded now. The heat, the sun shields went well, and the mirrors went well, and the secondary mirror went well, and the primary mirrors, the wings, two mirror wings folded out and locked in place, and all is well. And so now they're tweeting out, let's see, Eric Berger tweeted out, looks like the sun shield is working. Current hot side temperature of the Webb telescope is 131 degrees Fahrenheit, about the record high in Death Valley, California. The cool side temperature is minus 328 degrees Fahrenheit, well below the point at which nitrogen becomes a liquid. So on one side of the sun shield, 131 degrees Fahrenheit. On the other side of the sun shield, minus 328 degrees Fahrenheit. Yep, I guess the sun shield appears to be working and all well. And now the James Webb Space Telescope is on its way to the L2 point where it will, once it does a bunch of testing and all that, it will be orbiting and taking long distance photos, IR photos, of the lights that are way, way out there. What will it see? Oops! Mars Perseverance rover encounters debris challenge. The NASA's Perseverance rover tweets out, I recently captured my sixth rock core and have encountered a new challenge. Seems some pebble-sized debris is obstructing my robotic arm from handing off the tube for sealing and storage. More images and data to come. But they did share some images, and I do have a link on my Twitter feed, or you can just go to the NASA's Perseverance rover, Mars rover Twitter feed, and see. But yeah, you can clearly see the photographs of how they attempted to put the tube in place, and some pictures of where they had drilled and got the samples. But lo and behold, in one of the photos, you can see small, tiny pebbles of Martian rock sitting in an area where it would stop the tube from actually being inserted. So the thing is how do they get those out of where maybe, you know, I don't know what mechanism they have to, you know, just reach out and throw those pebbles away away from the blockage area, you know. And I don't know if they because they're near the tube entrance where the tube would go, and so if they fall inside there, will that impact them even further? Or, you know, and they look like they're in a lip, so you need to go and look at the picture on the Mars Perseverance rover feed, and you can see the problems they're going to be having trying to remove these little pebbles so they can insert that tube for storage. But yeah, so we'll see. I hope that they do find a way to completely fix this. Well, remember that conspiracy theory everybody was talking about, how China's lunar rover on the dark side of the moon saw a cube-type object in the distance. and people were saying, oh, it's a cube-type structure, we just know it. Well, I guess the rover has gotten close enough now to see what that thing actually was, and it was not cube-shaped at all. It was a rock, and I mean, I guess from a distance, it probably looked like a cube-shaped object, but it was a rock. And so people are saying different things about, you know, what was actually found. I actually tweeted out something I thought was funny. I found a Rubik's Cube and was able to edit it so it looked like it had crashed into the surface of the moon. And I put that. I said, well, this is what it really is. They're just not telling us the truth. So I was stirring up the conspiracy theory pot also. I'm guilty. But I guess it was nothing more than just a rock. Many people are disappointed. Oh, well. I guess this last batch of Starlink satellites that were sent up actually contained lasers, cross-link lasers, I guess. They enabled the satellites to communicate with each other to reduce their reliance on ground stations. Because Elon Musk on January 6th sent out a tweet that just said, Starlinks with lasers deployed in orbit. And I just did a quick investigation, and I added something to that. Because people were asking, you know, what kind of lasers? What are they going to do? All you had to do is just do some research and really find it out, you know, find out what they were up there for right off the bat. And I just put out there, they're for just what I said, enabling the satellites to communicate with each other and to reduce their reliance on ground stations. So that's all it was. But Elon sent out a little, you know, sent out that tweet, and people were, ooh, lasers, what are they up to? You know, it's the old, just like this cube-shaped rock, you know, people like, it's intrigue, you know, and people just label it conspiracy theorists, you know, and things like that. But it's just curiosity. People are just curious. And in this case, there are lasers, but they're not going to be doing like Star Wars stuff. They're just for communication. Well, NASA recently sent out a news release. It says NASA releases autonomous flight termination unit software to industry. It says NASA has provided an advanced release of its NASA autonomous flight termination unit software code to the launch industry, a critical milestone toward the final certification of NAFDU, and that's the acronym for the termination unit, which is on track for February 2022. NAFDU is a game-changing command and control system available to launch vehicle providers for use at all U.S. launch ranges in ensuring public safety during launch operations. And then it talks about among the companies that are working with NAFDU software is Rocket Lab, which has a launch pad at Virginia Space's Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport at NASA's Wallops Flight Facility. So basically, the NAFTU, the NASA's autonomous flight termination unit software, you know, and it's the unit that's actually attached to a rocket. Pretty much what they do, they destroy it in flight prior to, you know, so if it looks like it's going to be, if there's some problems and it doesn't look like the launch is going to be successful, to protect the public, it will destroy the rocket under certain circumstances, you know, with precautions taken, of course. But and you've seen things like this happen. But I guess now this is like an upgrade, and now it's becoming more available to industry since there's so many commercial flight companies coming on board now. We used to call it, when I was in the industry, when I supported the Space Command and the launch facilities on the East and West Coast, we called it Command and Destruct. That's what we called it. But it has new acronyms now. It's just no longer Command and Destruct. But that's basically what it does. You command and then it destroys. You send a command to this unit and it will destroy the rocket. And just in case, you know, to protect the public, basically. But that's what this thing is doing. So, interesting. So, if you want to read more on this, there is a link on my Twitter feed, and it talks much more about the details about this autonomous flight termination unit and the software there. Wow, can you believe it? The Mars Helicopter Ingenuity gearing up for its 19th flight. 19. And it may have already accomplished that. I haven't really looked at it. Last time I tweeted, it was gearing up for the flight. It may have already accomplished that. 19 flights. That surpassed anything they were expecting with that Mars Ingenuity helicopter on Mars. Isn't that something? Way to go. And Andrew Jones was sending out some updates, talking about, let's see, it says here, the Tianhe robotic arm, and that is the space station, Chinese space station, Tiangong space station. It says the Tianhe robotic arm transferred Tianzhu 2 from an axial to a radial docking port on January 5th. So they're up there taking their robotic arm at the Chinese space station and moving the spacecraft around to different docking ports. And they did share some video of that maneuver. If you'd like to see it, it is on my Twitter feed. Okay, and that's it. Until next time. Space Cowboys.